And now, another awesome moment after the weather was revealed from Lincoln and Los Angeles and Gibraltar. We now actually have from the Siren Radio Studios in Lincoln, the amazing Eva McDonald, who's going to provide us with the weather forecast for Lincoln today. Eva, the microphone is now open.
And today there will be highs of 7 degrees centigrade, lows of 4 degrees centigrade, and after a very cold start, it will be cloudy with some outbreaks of rain.
Singer, scholar, festival ambassador, and midweek drivette. It's Eva McDonald on the Midweek Drive.
Tremendous. Eva, talk to us about the zip wire scenario. Why have you been possessed as somebody who has slight vertigo, fear of heights and so on, to actually hurl yourself down this chasm in Wales on a zip wire?
I know, I do have a fear of heights, mm-hmm. So I don't know where that came from.
Inspired
anyway.
By Boris Johnson, perhaps? Please don't say yes.
Maybe. Okay. Probably not. Mm-hmm. I'm quite adventurous and I quite like to try new things. And it was something on my bucket list. So I thought, what could I do that's quite easy at the start of the year? You know what? Go on a zip wire. And there's one in Wales, so I'll go do that one.
And later on in the year, of course, you'll be heading off to another one of those holiday camps, presumably.
I will. And I'm excited about this year. Last year I was a host, so I only got to do one slot of singing, which was right at the end. But this season, my role is a trooper vocalist. That's what they're called, the entertainment team, troopers. And we'll hopefully get to do a cabaret set every week.
A trooper vocalist whose speciality is operetta and zip wire scenario. That is the kind of level you need to reach if you wish to become a midweek driver on Siren Radio. Eva McDonald, we salute you. Here's Van Halen.
You've been down to the bottom with a bad man, babe, but you're back where you belong. Go get me my pistol, babe. Honey, I ain't tell right from wrong. Baby, please stop crying.
Stop crying.
Stop crying.
Stop crying.
Baby, please stop crying.
Stop crying.
Stop crying.
Stop crying.
Stop crying. Baby, please stop crying. The river, babe. Honey, I will meet you there. Go down to the river, babe. Honey, I will pay your fare. Baby, please stop crying.
Stop crying.
Stop crying.
Stop crying.
Baby, please stop crying.
Stop crying.
Stop crying.
Stop crying.
Baby, please stop crying. Looking for assistance, babe, or if you just want some company, or if you just want a friend you can talk to, honey, come and say about me.
And away goes Bob Dylan, of course, doing his stuff, saying, baby, please stop crying, which you might be doing, of course, if you are demanding some more transparency from your high street estate agent, as indeed a recent tweet revealed. The main topic today, 93% of estate agents do not list their fees, and 72% of homeowners agree the first fee given to them. To begin to answer this and to hopefully sort of make some eminently sensible suggestions, it's a genuine delight as ever to welcome a Renaissance woman extraordinaire and consumer champion. It's the legendary Alice Beer. Good morning, Alice.
Good morning, Renaissance woman indeed.
Yes, I think so. I think you've reached that stage where, with the multifaceted scenarios of yourself, Renaissance woman is definitely, I think, the next way forward.
I shall get that printed on a t-shirt immediately.
Splendid. Let's move on to this particular topic, which, clearly Purple Bricks put together this particular survey, and you might sort of think, this, okay, well, they're an online service and so on and so forth, but it is quite shocking, really. 93% with hidden fees.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even that they're hidden, they're just not there. And it's quite extraordinary, isn't it, that 93% are just not listing their fees on their websites. Now, if I was going to get, I was trying to think of a comparable industry where you'd get somebody into your home and you didn't know how much it was going to cost. So say I was going to get an extension on my house, I would get a builder in and I would get them to look around, and then they would tell me how much the job was going to cost. I'm not going to go with them straight away, am I? Mm. I'm either going to negotiate or I'm going to go and get another couple of quotes. Mm. But 72% of us, as you say, are agreeing that fee as soon as we hear it. So it's light of the, there's pressure on us, too, to be better negotiators, to be more upfront and demanding about our position of power here. But what we're calling for today is absolute clarity and transparency amongst high street estate agents, because this is not an acceptable situation.
Is it a balance between haggling and negotiation, where some people would actually say, I don't haggle, I negotiate?
Yeah, I think it's the same, it's different means to the same end, isn't it, really? I think you should negotiate because you are in a position of negotiating power. They want your money. I mean, if you look at the cost, so average price of a UK property, taking semis, terraces, flats, whatever, across the UK, is £240,325. So an estate agent's fee that's about 1.5%, that would take you to £3,604.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money that you're taking off your budget to buy your next house.
Yeah.
And if you've got a £1 million property, as we all know you have, and you're selling that, that's £15,000.
Mm.
Now, not to shop around, not to negotiate. You know, you're telling me that estate agent won't take your business for £12,000,
yeah,
or £13,000. Of course they will. Mm. They'd be nuts not to. But you need to shop around. You need to look at all the different price models. And it might be that if you've got a very saleable, very sort of easy to predict the price of, and very desirable house, it might be that the upfront fee model is for you, the one-off fee model is for you, and not the commission-based model.
Estate agents have clearly had a little bit of a bad reputation over the years. This doesn't help matters, does it, really?
No, it doesn't, because I think it's very hard to quantify. I mean, I feel sorry for them in a way, because it's very hard to quantify what they're doing. And then when you come to write this enormous sum, you think, oh, my God, they printed off a photo,
mm,
and they were hard to get hold of for the viewings, mm, and then I'm suddenly paying them £3,000. What's going on? So one in five people said they realised they paid too much for the service. So you really need to work out what you're getting for the money. You know, and some companies will offer you to do the viewings yourself, and therefore you don't have to pay for that. So that's taken out of the fee if you really want to stay in control. But if I'm going to buy a house, where are you going to look? You know, where are you going to look first of all? If you're interested in buying a house somewhere, I'm going to go tap, tap, tap on my iPad, aren't you?
Yeah.
Have a great look around. So we just need to be aware of the power that we've got in this marketplace. And if you're using a high street estate agent, great. Make them work for their money and agree the fee up front and negotiate.
Were you surprised by anything yourself, Alison? I mean, given that we are in the second decade of the 21st century, and as you've just said, most folk, there's a kind of acceptance that, well, you use your devices and tablets, etc., to effectively sort of find the best deals.
Yeah, I mean, I think every industry every now and then needs a bit of disruption, a bit of a shake-up, and I think estate agents might be sort of next on the list, because buying a property, with stamp duty being what it is, has suddenly become just an extraordinarily expensive process. So, you know, many people are staying put just because it's better value to get an extension or to go up into the attic or whatever, down in the basement. But I think you've got to look at both ends of the equation, haven't you? It's not just in buying a property, it's in selling a property. And I think up until now, we've just not questioned it. We've just accepted it. But let's be the questioning generation. You know, let's shake this up a bit and let's say, tell me how much your fee is. Yeah, okay, all right, come round for a quote then and come and have a look at it. And then, yeah, we'll see what wiggle room there is.
Indeed, and pleasing to find that a recent report that we covered a couple of weeks ago suggested that there were still people who thought stamp duty was something to do with philately, but I think that's another...
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's best not go there, really.
Oh,
sometimes it doesn't help.
Philately? It's just Scrabble work.
It's true. In terms of finding out further details and further information and advice from your good self, or indeed just to sort of work through that, where would you suggest people should go?
Well, there's lots of things you can do. If you're interested in looking into a different structure of pricing, you can look at purplebrick.co.uk. They commissioned this survey. Or you can go on and find out a little bit more about what to expect from an estate agent from a consumer organisation like Which.
And that is why, Alice Beer, you are the consumer champion.
Oh,
so
renaissance woman.
Very much so. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Very.
Good.
Very.
It's our consumer research question. It's a new form of media, I feel. Let's do the sort of consumer feedback live on air, so to speak.
Oh, tick that box. I'll go for a five if five is top.
Marvellous. So I take it we may be able to prevail upon you to join us as the year proceeds to connect with us once again about matters consumer and others.
Definitely, definitely.
Hurrah!
You surprise me.
I surprise you.
Yes. That you, who have written so much of better worlds, should think it a dream when you find one. Or is it that you fail to recognize one of your own dreams when you see it? And this is our school. This is where we start to prepare our young for the future.
Knows where the circle ends. La la la. least they're partially wrong. To someone else you are strong.
Fun, what joy, what lost horizon magic there, taking us out of the Alice Beer segment there and into the world is a circle without a beginning and nobody knows where the circle ends, Eva MacDonald.
No, they don't. Could wind up anywhere.
Exactly. We could wind up in the Forest of Dean, which is probably where we will be winding up after we've actually heard from Lisa Snowden about her challenges with bloating. Apparently a bit of an issue these days in which people, yeah, I know, the things that we will talk about at 21 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Siren Radio just opens up a whole new field. And it was something I must admit I hadn't anticipated focusing on, but Lisa's got some interesting words to say about coping with bloating, irritable bowels and all manner of things after the monkeys.
Always leaving early and sleeping late.
sometimes referred to as the tummy test, but it's actually bloating
in all sorts of ways. It seems that 70% of us suffer from bloating at some point, but we don't know why. And the two fantastic individuals we're delighted to speak to talk about this is the awesome presenter extraordinaire, Renaissance woman in many ways, Lisa Snowden. How are you, Lisa?
Hi, very good, thank you. That's lovely of you to say.
Always true. And the equally wonderful Dr. Anthony Hobson, consultant clinical scientist. How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent. You're also clinical director of the Functional Gut Clinic. Lisa, if we can come to your good self, now generally you are the spirit of perfection in so many ways, and yet you say that obviously when it comes to bloating, you've had the challenge, you've had those difficulties, so share with us the sort of scenarios that's affected yourself.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, over the years, just I've definitely suffered with bloating. I think, you know, a lot of us probably won't admit it, but, you know, I certainly love talking about things and health, and I think knowledge is power, and so over the years I've had lots of bloating and lots of kind of IBS issues, and certain foods have kind of triggered that, as it were, and so I became interested in taking a probiotic to really help and ease those symptoms, and I've been taking Proven probiotics for about nearly 3 months now, and it's completely helped me in so many ways. Helping to boost my immune system. It's helped sort of like calm everything down. I have much less bloating. And so it's just kind of a part, it's just become part of my sort of wellness and my everyday life.
Anthony, I well recall back in the 20th century talking to journalist colleagues who were suffering from irritable bowel syndrome and a whole range of things, and it seemed to be emerging then as a kind of almost a response to stress, and clearly we have too much stress in our life and so on, but there's a balance right there. Is this a new thing? Is this something that's always been with us, or is it something to do with those deadly things, processed foods?
Well, stress can come in two directions. It can either come from the bowel itself or from the brain. So if you're stressed, then it sends signals down to the bowel to change its the way it contracts and secretes and makes it all upset. But likewise, if you're putting things into the bowel that it doesn't like, then the bowel gets stressed and that sends messages back up. So it's a bi-directional approach, and I think if we can reduce stress in both our lifestyles and also to improve our diets, then you know we get a double whammy effect.
That's fair to say, Lisa, that obviously doing the fantastic stuff you do in TV presentation, etc., it can be just a tad stressful. I know it's not necessarily brain surgery, but it is a case of light goes on, you're sort of... do you find that you have to manage your lifestyle more to be aware in terms of what sort of things you can eat, what things you can't eat, and so on?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, going back to the whole stressful lifestyle, you're absolutely right. Live TV, learning scripts, it's, you know, like you say, the light goes on and you're live to millions of people. It is really stressful. Add to that foods that didn't agree with me, it was just like, you know, a disaster waiting to happen. I'd have, like, stress going on and I'd be, like, drinking too much coffee and too much milk, and it was just kind of a combination of everything. So I did have to take a kind of step back, manage my stress, and also be more aware about what I'm eating and how certain foods make me feel as well after I've eaten them, bloating and all that sort of stuff.
And is there something, Anthony, that we can look to? Cause clearly, I think most of us, when we reach a certain stage in our life journey, we kind of know that, well, if you want to actually get, I don't know, spots, you definitely go for that particular brand. If you want to actually sort of have a rash, you go for that. You know, we have food allergies that are certainly around. Is it a similar thing with the alveoli and microvilli and all our wonderful friendly bacteria that work inside of us?
I think everyone knows which foods upset them, and you can avoid them or reduce them or occasionally eat them and then just put up with the what I call the bowel hangover rather than the brain hangover that you might get with alcohol. I think the worry that I have is that more and more people are avoiding more and more things, and the thing that keeps the gut healthy is to have a diverse diet, have lots of different things from different food groups, but do that in moderation. And then occasionally, you know, understand that it's natural to be a bit bloated after you've had, say, you know, beans and pulses and high-fiber foods, and not worry about it too much. But if those things persist, know when to either change your diet or escalate upwards and go and see your GP.
Indeed. But again, I think you've addressed the whole notion of managing diet, being aware of that particular aspect that we work through. Again, returning to yourself, Lisa, I mean, presumably this is something which, you know, it's not so much a condition as such, but it's something you're aware of. And you know, knowledge is power, as we've already said. So clearly, the more you're actually aware of this, and of course, with the work of using good bacteria and so on, it's not necessarily a complete, it's a disaster, it's all over, my career is finished time.
No, absolutely not. You know, it's just, just fascinating to kind of find out more about how the gut works. And, like, speaking to Dr. Anthony, you know, like, upsetting the bowel upsets the brain and vice versa. It's just absolutely fascinating. And just by making a few changes here and there, by increasing my exercise to lower my stress, by just sort of like trying to be more mindful, meditation, just all of that has just really helped. And then, you know, if there's certain foods that I'm going to eat, like the bowel hangover, which I love, because there's certain things you'd be like, you know what, my stomach's not going to like me in a few hours for this, but it tastes delicious, so I'm going to go for it, life's too short. I take my Proven probiotics, and it just eases those symptoms a little bit more. And it just keeps that gut, my gut, more healthy in a happy environment.
One of the favourite words I had back in the day when I was reading biology at university was borborygmi, which I think is the name that we give to the sound that our gut makes as it squeezes its stuff through the oesophagus. Anthony, without necessarily going into oesophageal sort of scenarios and such like, ultimately, is the good thing, as Lisa's just described, about using probiotics and so on, it can actually help that balance going, and balance is essential to our good health and digestion.
Certainly, and just to go back to borborygmi, there is actually a device now that measures bowel sounds in patients, so they've taken that.
I think it's a new series waiting to be happening. I mean, I really do.
I love it.
Biologists never waste anything, but you always kind of regurgitate it. So, but, you know, if you imagine that there are certain types of bacteria that can ferment things 10 times more aggressively than others, if you can replace those with a probiotic which can actually more gently ferment food, so you still get the natural goodness and fermentation that helps the bowel keep healthy, but it doesn't get overdone, then that will be beneficial. Now, what we see quite often is that patients have bad bacteria in the colon, and if you give them the same test meal as a healthy subject, the amount of fermentation they get is super excessive, and that results in loose bowel motions and bloating and noises. And then introducing either dietary changes or a probiotic can bring that back into balance. So, yeah, we've got to listen to our bowel quite literally.
Exactly, and as we often say, be good to your inner workings and they'll be continually good to your good self. Lisa, where's the best place to go to for further information, even if people want to find out what they talk about? Borborygmi, what's that all about then?
Well, for the all probiotic advice, go to provinprobiotics.co.uk. And then for the other little gurgly bits and pieces, do you want to do the...
I love that, little gurgly bits and pieces. Just spot on. Genius.
I would always recommend going to the IBS Network website, which is a fantastic resource for anyone with any digestive issues. That would be great to go to as well.
Fantastic. I've got two final questions for you, our kind of customer satisfaction things. First of all, Lisa Snowden, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
A wonderful, wonderful one. Yes, thank you.
This is good. And Dr. Hobson, has it been okay for your good self?
Yep, perfect.
Excellent. Well, hopefully we can connect with you again in the not-too-distant future. I still think that series is a goer, though, Lisa. You might like to suggest it.
I think after we finish this conversation, Dr. Anthony and I will be discussing.
Yeah,
Thank you for
thanks
the ideas.
Many thanks. Take care now.
Bye.
the fundamental difference between the paradigm Daleks and the classic Dalek design is the former only looks good when viewed from the front, whereas the latter looks great from every angle. That's pretty much the essential difference that has been put forward by our next guest, Stephen McDonald. What do you think about that? Does one of those Daleks look better from one angle than another Dalek? The classic Dalek or the less classic Dalek?
Probably the classic Daleks, but, you know, yeah, I'm open to saying...
Well, as you're going to be taking that zip wire challenge in a few days' time from now in Wales, not
too
far.
No one knows what I'll look after like after
no
that.
No one will know at all. And certainly a gentleman who I'd be surprised if he ever has done the zip wire challenge. Well, he was a wonderful soul at Forest of Dean and still is, of course, co-founder of CaldorCity.com. And indeed, the man of whom it has frequently been said on this show, nobody knows more about Blake 7 than Alan Stevens. How are you, Alan?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you, Alex?
Very good indeed. Fiona did, of course, a sensational piece a few weeks ago with us in which she gave a very reasoned and sensible review of the Two Doctors Christmas special that we actually had. And you know, unless you have anything to add to that, we'll move straight on to the next classic Alan Stevens quote, which, of course, is... Chris Boucher once told me, "If we can understand, then we can forgive."
Yes, he did say that, yeah.
What did he mean?
Well, I mean, if you understand something, then you forgive it. There you are.
See, that, Eva, is what all this higher educational mark is all about. If we can understand, then we can forgive.
Okay, I'll try that.
I have already sent email correspondence to our mutual colleague and friend and Midweek Drive at Graham Harper, who was on the show next Wednesday afternoon or evening, around about 6:15. Richard Fitzwilliams, ace film critic, actually burst his sides with laughter almost in terms of what I defined as probably the funniest 30 minutes of programming I've seen this decade, nay, possibly even this century, when it comes to Inside Number 9 and the awards edition. Eva, you probably haven't seen this as yet, but I honestly urge you, and I will send you the link via the BBC iPlayer, to actually access this particular number, because it will put your whole perception on working on the entertainment industry in a whole new light.
Okay, I'll have a go.
Extraordinarily wonderful, and I believe, Alan, you were also quite impressed as well.
Yeah, I thought it was extremely good. It was a very good script. The thing about Number 9 is, on the whole, they're very good. I mean, they occasionally, it's not quite there, but it certainly was last week, and... In fact, I think this entire season they've done this year has been very, very good. It's a pity those people aren't taking over Doctor Who, really.
Well, I mean, inside Bernie Clifton's dressing room or...
That was another one directed by Graham Harper as well, yeah.
Precisely.
That was very, very good also, yeah.
Just goes to show that quality will act from that perspective. Eva, I suspect you might not be familiar with Inside Number 9.
No, I'm not. So,
Alan, would you like to share with Eva, and indeed possibly a listener who might still think, what are they speaking about Inside Number 9? You know, we've moved from borborygmi and irritable bowel movements and the whole notion of bloating and property prices. Now they're talking about Daleks and Inside Number 9. So, Alan, would you like to provide some listeners' notes for this and explain what it is we're referring to?
Yeah, it's a kind of, what do you call it, an anthology series? Basically, it's the same two actors in each... story, isn't there? What are they called? I can never remember their names.
Pemberton and Shearsmith.
Yeah,
Reece
Pemberton.
And Steve.
Yeah, Shearsmith. How could I forget that? Yeah, they originally did a series called
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. League of Gentlemen, I should say.
The League of Gentlemen. Yeah, that's a different show altogether with Mark Gatiss. Mark Gatiss isn't in this one, but it's been running for about 4 years now, and they think they do about six stories, and each one of them is I think the connection between all of them, by the fact that Shearsmith and Pemberton are in all of them, is that they're all connected in some way with the number 9. So sometimes it takes place in the house with, you know, the number 9 on the door. I think the last one was a studio, wasn't it? Studio 9 or something, where they were, or Room 9, where they were debating whether or not which actress should receive an award for that year's. So that was the last one. That was extremely good. I thought it was a lot of sense in it, and I think also there was a lot about class and race as well. And I think that one of the things, a very good episode of Inside Number 9 is one that you watch and then you think, I've got to watch that again now, because the ending, the twist, is giving you a different perspective on it. So you know, you discover that and you watch it again, you think, ah, that's interesting how it interreacts. So you know, I think it's a very, very good show.
An anthology of darkly comic twisted tales by Steve Pemberton and Reece Shearsmith, each one taking place behind a door marked number 9.
That sounds quite, not scary, but I don't know what the word is.
It's everything Roald Dahl wanted Tales of the Unexpected to be, but much better.
Oh, Tales of the Unexpected. Yeah, Tales of the Blatantly Obvious.
Exactly. You know, there's a sort of scenario there, the little twist that's actually there. So, Eva, before you head off to, well, you might, maybe before you do your zip wire scenario
maybe,
in Wales next week, perhaps you'd like to sort of investigate and explore this wonderment. And certainly by the time you return to us and before you head off to a place, do you know, Alan, she's even going north of Skegness. She's going to Saltfleet
in the summer.
Exactly. Saltfleet to be part of the entertainment fraternity there.
Less heard place.
I'm thinking
it.
Greatest Show in the Galaxy has just found a new home here, and it's Saltfleet. There are people who might follow Doctor Who and Sylvester McCoy's era who may understand what I'm talking about. Others might sort of think, he's just going off on one, for goodness sake. He said he was talking about Blake Seven. Let's speak about Blake Seven, because again, Eva, I suspect you're not familiar with Blake Seven.
No. See, I need enlightening in all of this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We need that.
Teach me.
We need that enlightening Aladdin moment to actually point out that 40 English years ago, 1 year after Star Wars had hit, but a series that was in preparation apparently long before that whole sequence, a kind of Dirty Dozen in space, was beginning to emerge with Aurak, with Blake, with Rog, with Avon.
No, Rog and Blake are the same person.
Thank you. See, that's why I introduced Alan as the one who knows all about the Blake Seven series. Share with us, Alan, the whole notion of Blake Seven and why, despite lots and lots and lots of attempts and people say it's coming back, it's coming back, it's coming back. Even Gareth Thomas has moved into another dimension now, and he said, "That's it. I'll run it from beyond the pale."
So, what was the question there? There was one in there.
Blake Seven.
There,
what's it all about?
What's it all about? It's interesting. I mean, if you compare it to Doctor Who, I think Doctor Who is about a sort of chaotic guy travelling around in a box doing stuff. And Blake Seven is a series, I'd say it's about trying to find a political system that prevents human beings from tearing each other apart. And they go through various, like a theocratic system and a fascist system and various things, to try and nail this down. But I think the big problem is that people, the idea in the series anyway, is that people are fundamentally antisocial. So you have the Federation, which is it's effectively a fascist organization, but it's at its core, it is there to protect the human race and stop it from tearing itself apart. So there's this continual tension between sort of barbarism and a sort of technological civilization. So there you are. How's that our answer? One that you expected.
Well, I mean, for a moment, I thought the whole computer system here was beginning to crash, and so we can't cope any more than with this. But actually, if we see the, you can see the little descriptor there for the benefit of our listener, Eva, created by Terry Nation, with Michael Keating, Paul Darrow, Peter Tudnam, Jan Chappell, a group of convicts and outcasts fight a guerrilla war against, as we said, the enemy.
Really? Federation.
The Federation, exactly. Not to be confused with the Star Trek Federation, which is completely scenario. It's a Terran Federation, the totalitarian Terran Federation, with, of course, the aid of, for at least the first two seasons, their highly advanced alien spaceship, because before they got a less advanced alien spaceship in season 4.
Which is completely wrong. It was 3 seasons for a start. It blew up at the end of series 3, and then they got another spaceship, which was it was made by, you know, Earth or whatever it was.
Yes.
So it was an old ship called a Wanderer class Planet Hopper Mark II.
Yeah. You see, that's one of the reasons why I'll do the Trek, Alan will do the Blake Seven. It's all wonder stuff for that movie. So, is it ever going to come back, or is it just a case of, you know, it's doomed now to be one of those series like A for Andromeda, or episodes?
Well,
Quantum
A for Andromeda was remade, wasn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, can we see it, or do you think it's going to be a case of no? It's gone now.
You can see it because it's available on DVD. Yeah. I mean, whether or not the show would be remade,
On a serious note, Alan, what is the word on the street from the point of view of your own perspective? Are we looking forward to having, you know, people say, it's 40 years of Blake Seven, it's time we did something for this? Or is there going to be a message there? Or are you now being called away by the phone to actually do something completely different?
I'm still trying to follow up the question. What do you want? Is there been anything done this year on Blake Seven? Well,
yes.
I mean, Big Finish have been running these audios and stuff, and they did approach me to write one of them, though I haven't... been massively enthusiastic about that. the as for the TV show came back, I mean, effectively, I don't know. I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I mean, it's like watching Rising Damp, isn't it? You know, or Butterflies. You watch Rising Damp, and you think, how much is it the script, and how much is it Leonard Rossiter, and how much is it, you know, Francis de la Tour, and they kind of inhabit the characters, don't they? So, you know, the characters of Blake Seven, the actors who played them, are so strongly associated that if you brought the show back, you'd obviously have to recast it, and you'd have to, you know, and I'm not sure if it would be the same show. I mean, why not just do a new program? Like, you know, I mean, Firefly had a lot of stuff. Blake Seven was very influential on Babylon 5 and Firefly, and I think probably making a new show is better than going back and attempting to, you know, remake an old show, to be honest. I mean, I know it worked with Doctor Who, but Doctor Who's a bit more, you know, a bit more flexible, isn't it, in a way?
Well, of course, there is the arguments that Zachary Quinto and Chris Pine have actually done Spock and Kirk in a way that Nimoy and Shatner perhaps clearly were moving into different areas. But then J.J. Abrams rebooted the universe, so who knows?
Yeah, but I don't watch those. I don't think that's Star Trek. I love the original series, you know, back in the 60s. And, you know, and I have seen a lot of the, what's it one called?
Discovery?
No.
Great. Enterprise? Next Generation? Deep Space
Nine?
Yeah,
Next Generation. I've probably seen all of Next Generation when it first on. I just missed one or two episodes. Occasionally that woman comes. Who was the one who was Tasha Yar's... Not Tasha Yar.
Denise Crosby.
Diana Troy's mother.
That would be Loxana Troy.
Yeah, whenever Loxana Troy came on, I used to switch straight off.
But Major Barrett was such a fantastic incarnation, and what else was Nurse Chapel to do other than become the voice
of the computer? Well, I think she was fine as Nurse Chapel, and also I thought she was very good as the other character she played in The Cage.
Mm.
Number One. What was her name?
Number One, that's it.
She's only called Number One, was she?
Number One. If you want to check out the novel, you'll find in the Expanded Universe there is an identification of Number One, but primarily she was just Number One.
Now, what was her name in Expanded Universe, then?
I'm not going to even share that line at this particular stage. Use that thing called the Internet.
I thought you were the Star Trek expert here.
Yes, but I mean, ask Larry Nemeczek, Star Trek Files. He'll keep you updated in terms of Number One's real name.
So we're moving over to the Paradigm Dalek now, are we?
What do you think, Eva? Paradigm Dalek? I think so. A few minutes to actually go. So, yeah. Paradigm Dalek, it is.
Yeah, well, Paradigm Daleks, they were basically introduced... I've got a guy called Daniel O'Keefe, who's currently written an article for CT, which will be coming out. Currently, I'm editing 3 issues of Celestial Toy and the Duas's fanzine this year. And he's written a very good article about the Paradigm Daleks. They were basically brought in as a marketing thing in 2010, and were actually very badly designed. They were incredibly heavy. They couldn't reach their marks.
They look as though they've actually got one of those inner tubes around their middles to effectively stop them sinking in water.
Yeah, they've got a... Yeah,
they do.
Wings.
They look dreadful from the side. It looks as if it's going to fall over. Apparently, part of the problem was that they had 2 teams working on it, and one lot were working metric, and one lot were working in imperial measurements, and when they came together, it didn't fit, or, you know, it looked very, very odd. So it has a microcephalic head and this enormous base. And, you know, they came on with huge, you know, a plume or whatever, and everyone hated them. This is back in 2010 when they weren't so, you know, nowadays everyone's writing, everyone's signing protests and things, aren't they? Everyone's signing... But
they may be in the Forest of Dean or Staines, but as far as Lincoln's concerned, we like to keep ourselves on a civilised manner.
Well, back then, anyway, there was someone had got a petition up and 40,000 people signed it, so they weren't very successful, the Paradigm Daleks, and then they've dropped them completely now. But they were pretty horrible. But there are some people who still think they're fantastic and beautiful, and it was terrible. Well, we never found out.
Let's test this, because Eva, who has categorically gone on record as saying she stopped watching Doctor Who when David Tennant actually left, so clearly never experienced the Matt Smith reaction to seeing these Paradigm Daleks for the first time. Now you've seen all the images that we've worked our way through whilst Alan's been providing us with a commendably lucid and articulate
narrative.
Exactly. What would you say, Eva?
They're not as scary. Like, the new Daleks, they're not as scary. I remember when I was younger, now it was, what's his name, Christopher Eccleston, and he had the
Original Dalek.
Original Dalek.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was terrified, but, you know, I was only, like, 5, 6 years old.
Yeah, but Chris Eccleston was very good, wasn't he? I mean, he was very good at doing, you know, fear or anger and stuff. You know, he was a very good actor.
Yeah, definitely.
Probably, one of the best actors to play Doctor Who, to be honest.
Yeah, that was a scary time.
Yeah, well, I know the scene you're talking about. It was very well done, yeah. But these new ones, I mean, they painted them in these kind of, like, bright colours, like orange and white and blue and red, and I think there was one that was the colour of a wasp. They said they're going to paint it yellow and black because, like wasps, they said it was dangerous or pointless. They didn't know. They had called one a scientist
and
one a
drone. They could conceivably give you a Dalek version of anaphylactic shock if you weren't very careful.
there was a scientist, a drone, a strategist. Mm. A Dalek Supreme, and they couldn't think of what the last one could be, so they just called it the Eternal. So no one actually found it. Eventually, the Eternal, ironically, was accidentally backed over, a lorry backed over it and destroyed the thing, so the Eternal didn't last very long, actually.
Rather unfortunate.
And then they repainted them. Mm. Then they repainted them a sort of darker, more metallic colour, which was better, and they also, there was this hump thing at the back, a sort of weapons hatch they had at the back, which what was meant to happen was weapons would flip at the back and travel along that kind of groove on the shoulder section and replace the weapons. But it was
sounds like a committee design to me, Alan.
It was awful, wasn't it? Yeah, it was like a committee design.
But from your perspective, Eva, is the line not as scary? You still stand by that?
It's not scary, but no. I don't have any objection to them. They
Well, they've dropped them now anyway, so they haven't been on TV now for a few years. So
exactly.
They went back to the bronze ones, yeah.
Yesterday's World, another era we'll put up forward. Coming up later on today, we've got an edition of the Stone Tapes with Sam Stone and David J. Howe and George Mann and Robin Pierce, and they're talking...
Oh, Robin Pierce, yeah, he had a bit of a heart problem recently, didn't he?
Well, it's all right, we rescued him, we put him back on Midweek Drive yesterday, and all's well with the world. That's
actually, Robin Pierce has also written an article for CT, so... Yeah, I've been employing all of those people.
Exactly stuff. He's never employed me, but he's never asked for
Well, come along, don't I? You employ me.
So, Stone Tapes, a special on all things to do with mummies. That's the Egyptian tomb pharaohs and such like. This evening, just after 7 o'clock, just after the Chris Clarkson show here on Siren Radio, Eva MacDonald, would you like to put those last two questions to Alan Stevens, please?
Yes, of course. And Lynn, have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Yeah, and will we be hearing again from you very soon?
Well, it's up to Alex.
That's true.
Of course, Alan Stevens will return, with or without the Paradigm Daleks, and to actually correct me quite frequently on my errors and litter-strewn comments regarding that series, Blake's Eight. It'll all happen. Was it nine?
Actually, there were eight of them.
Originally. Yeah, you see, it's a strange world.
That you
from the 2017 remix, Bucks Fizz, Piece of the Action. We've had a piece of the action over the last 2 hours. We've been to Los Angeles with Phil Dearness, we've been to London with Richard Fitzwilliams, we've been to Gibraltar with Gabriella Peralta, and Tyneside, obviously, with Ian Lennox. Alice Beer, we thank for her consumer advice, and indeed Lisa Snowden's views on bloating. Alan Stevens, we've just heard from, and Eva McDonald, have you enjoyed being back on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for another hour of joy?
I have. It's been very good.
Excellent. Now, you won't be back in next week, but we will hopefully be featuring you for about 4 or 5 minutes, assuming we can get that mobile single connected with Wales after you've successfully completed the Zipwire routine on Tuesday.
I hope so. I don't know what the signal's like in Wales, but I hope
well,
it works.
Well, let's just hope you survive and can tell the tale, if not next week, live on the Midweek Drive, and certainly the week afterwards. That's it. We're out of here for the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, February 8th, 2018. Have a tremendous day. Can we say happy zip wiring, please? 1, 2, 3.
Happy zip wiring.